What the hell is elder care? Hey, Jane, why don't you give us a little recap from our last podcast?
Certainly. Our last podcast, Kate and I welcomed Diane Kars, businesswoman, RN, successful businesswoman, RN, started her own company at age 51 after she had been in nursing. She had some financial backing from her brothers, and they dedicated the company to her mother and wanted a legacy in that way. And Diane gave us a nice overview of how she started the business, how she's been successful for 20 years. And she also shared, and I hope the listeners appreciated, I wanted them to understand what the home health benefit included, how to get onto home care, what the restrictions are, what the homebound status. So if you haven't listened to it, please listen to it. There was a lot of good information. And I'm really looking forward to tonight's session as well with the information.
Yeah, and I'd like to introduce our new guest for the podcast, What the Hell is Elder Care? And this is Annette Capozzoli. And Annette has been retired for 2 years. She was a speech pathologist, and I have had the pleasure of knowing her for quite some time because our kids went to the same school. Mm-hmm. So I've always felt that speech pathology was the forgotten child and or the forgotten therapy. And so I invited Annette to come in and share with us what she would do as a speech pathologist in the home healthcare field.
I agree, Kate, when you say it was the missing therapy, because I think everybody focused on OTPT, OTPT.
Right.
And I think what also is going to be discussed is we're not just talking about strokes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Which is another misconception, right, that you only get speech when you have a stroke.
Right.
So, yes, thank you. Yes. Welcome.
So, yes, wow. Welcome, Annette.
Well, thanks, Kate and Jane. Thanks for having me. Yeah, my name is Annette Capozzoli. Our title is speech language pathologist.
Okay.
And I have been doing that for 44 years. I started out in home care, then started working in skilled nursing facilities, and then eventually came back to home care. And that was really my love. So a big misconception about speech therapy, and the one that I would get every time I called the home and said, you know, my name's Annette, I'm the speech pathologist that is coming to see your mom or your dad. Oh, he doesn't need speech. He talks just fine. And then once I would question them a little bit and say, well, you know, are they talking, or are you answering questions for them? Or do they have difficulty understanding what is being said to them? Or do they have memory difficulty or voice difficulty, other things? Oh, yes, he does. Yes, he does. Well, then, you know, I could get my foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
My experience ran the gamut of speech language. Not just the articulation, I guess, when we're talking speech, you know, the articulation could be impaired. They don't sound correct because of a stroke or because of Parkinson's or, you know, some other neurological disorder. I got into a lot of the language component of it and evaluated how well they understood. Maybe they couldn't follow like one or two part directions, or if questions were asked of them, they had difficulty following what was being asked of them. So their receptive language.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they would have difficulty in reading simple words and understanding what words meant again, as a result of a stroke that would have happened. Certainly, difficulty recalling words and, you know, the anomia. Or putting even words together to form sentences. We would also work on, numbers, calculations. Sometimes that would be impaired as a result of even, you know, which we wouldn't think about if they had a stroke or had some impairment with neglect, and they couldn't see certain numbers off to the side on their computer screen or interpret numbers. We would work with them on that. But the other big area that I dealt with was swallowing. And swallowing certainly was, you know, in the skilled nursing facilities, but then also when they came home. And swallowing issues could have been as a result of head and neck cancer, whether or not they went through radiation or even had some anatomy changed. I've seen patients with like partial glossectomies where part of their tongue was removed and they need to relearn how to swallow again. So swallowing was like a big part of it. It would start in the hospital, obviously, and they would have gone through various tests, modified barium swallow study to see what was happening with that swallow. And from there, they would have come home with certain diets. We would work on different exercises or compensatory strategies. Too often, it's not the same as, oh, well, you know, if you swallow, put your chin down. You know, doctors would say that invariably, or some nurses, and that is not always correct. That's not always the same. You can't do one thing to improve everyone's swallow. And sometimes in that case, it can make things worse, mm-hmm. you know? So, mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, the hardest thing is trying to have the patients accept the need to be on thickened liquids. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they needed something a little bit thicker. If they drank thin water, it just splashed down too quickly and they could have aspirated.
Right.
And sometimes it's an easy fix like that. I did see a gentleman with ALS. And as the deterioration was going on, he was having more and more difficulty with trying to tolerate thin liquids. And as soon as we thickened it up, whether they have various powders or gels thicket and such, as soon as we added something to it and made it a little bit more cohesive, he was better able to handle it and was better able to swallow. So you want to keep patients functioning at their highest level of function, you know, with especially regarding this, the swallow. You don't want to have someone be nothing by mouth. That's no quality of life. You know?
Right. And I remember with, I've talked about my aunt numerous times, and she passed away a few months ago. And one of the things that I kept on requesting was speech mm-hmm. because I was concerned about her swallowing. Mm-hmm. And was she aspirating? Because, you know, at that certain point with dementia yeah. or Alzheimer's, whatever, they can stop. They can forget how to swallow or
right.
to chew, right? And
right.
so that food just kind of
pockets.
So that was really important that we did get it, which was great. It took a little while to mm-hmm. get them to accept it, but
was it the physician accepting it or the patient or what? You know, because sometimes physicians might say, oh, well, you know, there's no need for that, or they're just.
It was kind of like the same with one thing. The social worker didn't follow through with it. And then dealing with the director of nursing, when I had to ask about hospice to come in, and he said, we do our own comfort measures here. But it was me requesting again that the doctor didn't. It was okay. me having to get that referral through to yeah. the doctor.
Yeah.
So that's okay. where there was that uh-huh. kind of barrier.
Yeah.
So
and that's interesting with dementia patients, they actually regress. And so going backwards, like to the type of swallow that the infants start with, mm-hmm. they sort of regress back to,
sure.
you know, and going back to that at the very end, you know, the sex swallow or not being able to even take anything by mouth.
Right. Right.
And, you know, and the worst thing, well, you know, you don't want a PEG tube that does
right.
not extend life nor allow for quality and such.
I agree.
So,
and,
yeah.
and just for the listeners who should have, but maybe did not do their advanced directive, a PEG tube and a feeding tube are artificial feeding means when swallowing and calorie intake is not as as appropriate and life-sustaining as what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if I could just kind of piggyback off of both of you, sure. I'd like to make a note for, again, education for listeners. I came from the hospice world at the end of my career, and doctors were not receptive to speech, in which we were entitled to have speech. That was mm-hmm. not a rehabilitative goal. It was a safety, quality of life goal.
Agreed.
So we could have speech to tell us to thicken it, to tell us this, because, you know, we used to go in, and if I can, I'm going to sound silly when I tell you, but we used to go in and have people that were not able to really eat and swallow. And there's a family member shoving chicken nuggets, mm-hmm. Chick-fil-A nuggets, because she loves them. And we'd be having strokes because of aspiration risk into the lungs. It's right. dangerous.
Right.
But yeah. that's why listening, when you said it's very interesting, who doesn't even want to just make it a quality of life evaluation and one or two treatments, which are acceptable, whether there's dementia, hospice diagnosis mm-hmm. or not.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And education is a big thing to the staff. I know in skilled nursing facilities, I would get a referral because somebody choked, and here you go to see them and they're laying in their bed almost, you know, flat, and the tray sitting up right up to their neck, and nobody's around to assist them with anything. A lot of times it has to do with just, okay, wait a minute, they should be sitting at 90 degrees. You should be giving them one bite at a time. You know, you should be watching to make sure the swallow is complete. So and especially in home health, it was essential that somebody was there to, you know, that I would not only teach the patient what they needed to do, but the family members. They were a big part of that, you know, of the care. So swallowing can affect all aspects of any patient with neurological disorders as well. Even Parkinson's, I saw quite a bit. But then going in the other realm, voice was another component that I saw a lot too. I treated patients. Now, I was certified in Lee Silverman voice treatment, which is your speak loud and would be able to provide that service to patients who had Parkinson's. So I saw patients for that, but then I also saw trach patients, vent patients, and laryngectomies. And so needed to work with them on how to restore their voice again, whether it be with a special valve or, you know, learning again how to inject air and get their voice to work. The other component that I worked with a lot too, which Kate alluded to with dementia, was cognitive communication. And that sometimes was the hard thing with getting the physicians to refer, because patients speaking just fine. Yeah, but you know what? He's not remembering phone calls. He's not, you know, able to remember his meds. He's not able to take care of himself and function at his highest function. So it was interesting. I did treat a physician, a PCP, who suffered a mild traumatic brain injury. And I came in and worked with him because he was having difficulty with attention and selective attention and focusing. And he was worried about going back to his practice and having to listen to the nurse, take a phone call, write his notes. And I worked with him for a couple of months on getting his abilities back again. And he did say, I have a new appreciation for what you do. And hopefully he looked at his patients a little bit differently as well and would refer them, for services. So, that was quite interesting. But
just a question, when you had mentioned before about different treatments, different diagnoses.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen a lot of status post radiation that you've needed to work with swallowing?
Definitely.
Yeah.
And not even, and we try to get them before they have the radiation. So it's called like pharyngesize. You want to work those muscles and get them to the highest abilities prior to them having the radiation, because the radiation tightens those muscles and they're less able to work and function. So you want to get them strengthened prior to that. And the thing is getting them continuing to eat and drink, because the best swallow exercise is to swallow. And so if you have somebody and they're just like, well, it, you know, well, with radiation, it could hurt, there could be pain, or it could be difficult and take a lot of time. Yes, but you're working that muscle, and to continue to work that muscle throughout is imperative.
So yeah. You're starting with them before they go into radiation to
definitely.
Make sure that they're stronger, and that you also have and a baseline.
But... Right, and that they have the exercises that they do too prior to that, and to keep that up.
See, I think that's key, because that's also like having physical therapy before you go in and have a knee surgery or a surgery in general, being fit before you go in.
Right.
So
best outcome, right?
Yeah. For our listeners out there, then make sure that you order speech.
Yes.
If you are about to go under any type of radiation treatment.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting. I'm learning so much in this little bit of time.
That was interesting to me because I worked oncology for years, and would see significant changes after some radiation, from a voice perspective as well as a swallowing, not wanting to eat perspective. That's why I wondered if you saw a lot and treated a lot, or if it was just some patients that I had been familiar with.
No. And I think at Hillman Cancer Center, they're quite good at doing just that. Yeah, and seeing those patients before they're being seen for radiation. Yeah,
that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. That's great. I'm just impressed, but go ahead, Annette.
But, it's interesting what you say about dementia and treating dementia, because too often people say, well, they don't. With other progressive disorders like ALS, or Parkinson's, or MS, multiple sclerosis. I mean, our goal is maybe not always restore, back to, but we're compensating, And so we teach them compensatory strategies.
Right.
And then ultimately maybe adapting. Maybe they can't do this again, but with the assist of somebody else, they can change the way they do something.
It's not going back to their normal, but it's trying to find something new to help them with.
Exactly. Yeah. And so far as like dementia, I remember one gentleman was an airplane pilot, and though they need to be screened or tested every so often, and he was diagnosed with a cognitive decline. And so I did go out to see him. And at that stage, he was, I know this is what I have. I have this, dementia. And, but he was at the stage where he could incorporate some strategies. Like he was able to use writing to write down messages. He was able to use some apps like memory for remembering rather to take his medicines, or, even notes that would assist him with functioning. So at that point, he was, a good client. He was able to be worked with, and teaching even the wife, okay, now this is where he's at right now, but look for this and this down the line. And then, more assist might be needed, because sometimes families see their loved ones as functioning well within the routine. In their house, they might be able to take care of themselves, but then when they enter the skilled nursing facility, new, out of different routine, they're really seem much more impaired. And so the family might have to be, discussed with them. There might need to be a caregiver that comes in, or they might need to check in on this person a little bit more often, because they really are struggling. you know, patients don't want to be telling their family members that they are. Mm-hmm. You know, they try to cover up, so to speak.
Right.
And
right.
sometimes that doesn't, we spend more time with them and we can delve into and see, well, wait a minute, this person isn't really functioning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty scary for mm-hmm. them too. They don't want to give up their house. Right. They don't want to give up, you know, that control. And so they fake it. And, you know, some, you know, outcomes could come as a result that aren't favorable, like falls and fire, you know.
Choking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But as I've said to Kate, too, and to your point, sometimes denial is just so comforting.
Exactly.
You know, and it's very hard to be the educator, as you right. had to be, because I know you have experienced this. When somebody wants a history, it breaks your heart when they say, well, 2 years ago, they were, and you know, you're thinking, oh man, 24 months ago was a long time to have some changes and to cause some real threats,
mm-hmm.
you know, with accidents happening. Mm-hmm. And family members have a tendency, oh, you wouldn't have believed they were doing this, or they could talk this, or they understood, they balanced their checkbook
right.
a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things that you were put in a position where it was very hard, you know, to say this may be the new normal or the new moving forward.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Because again, the patients don't want to give that up. They, you know, want to continue to do that, but you might see some changes in there, some numbers that don't add up mm-hmm. or, yeah. So,
oh,
yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is to give that up. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My thing is I continue to focus on dementia,
mm-hmm.
you know, because let's say that you are with a loved one and they have dementia. And what is really the safest way of feeding them? Would you just say, if I'm correct on this, like some of the safer foods for them?
Oh, okay.
You know,
generally.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the softer
right.
items, things that are, and what I would tell them is things that you can take with your fork and smash it. If you can smash it with your fork, then it is mechanical soft or soft
okay.
foods. And generally those are good ones. However, that isn't always the case, because then what enters into it is how quickly they're putting that food in their mouth. And sometimes they're not paying attention to that. And they're putting the food in. And pretty soon they have what we call chipmunk cheeks. And they're pocketing the food because they're forgetting. And just by the matter of providing them with a smaller plate and just a few items on the plate, or having them put their fork down between bites, can allow them to stay on a soft diet and not necessarily, oh, we have to puree all their food and make it like, you know, baby food. That mm-hmm. is the biggest thing that I always, you know, tell my patients. There's always a way to get around that, you know, because
mm-hmm.
sometimes they would say, well, I bought this jar of baby food for them. No, that doesn't taste good to,
they're not
you
gonna
know,
eat that.
An elderly person, right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sometimes you can overcook something and make it even softer. But when we go in for our evaluation, we could see, yeah, just by some simple things, putting that fork down, giving them a smaller plate, or sometimes as simple as, okay, after every two bites of food, we're going to take a drink. Oh, Dad doesn't drink at all until the end of the meal. Well, you know, then by that time, sometimes because these muscles are weaker, and generally, okay, they do as we get older, but not to the point where we should all choke. You know, so sometimes we need what's called a liquid wash, something to clear that throat after every couple of bites. So depending on the person and what we see, you know, we'll say some different strategies and, you know, even put them beside the patient. Okay, these are what you need to pay attention to when you're eating
mm-hmm.
or what the caregiver can do to assist.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, because it's not a blanket thing. It's not, and that always cringed me whenever nurses said, just put your chin down when you swallow, you'll be fine. It's just,
tuck your chin. Yeah. That's what taught me in nursing school 45 years ago.
I know, yeah. And I mean, we have come a long way, and just with imaging now, with the modified barium swallow or the fiber optic endoscopic, where they put the down through the nose, they can see what happens when you swallow. You know, we're not just guessing. Like, you know, a physician wouldn't just say, or, you know, a therapist wouldn't say, well, do this exercise for your knee, you know, without knowing, well, wait a minute, what's going on with that knee? What's going on with that hip? So the same thing with swallowing. We don't have x-ray vision. We can't see what's happening. So, you know, a hard thing early on was just convincing the nursing home or, you know, the doctor that this person needs imaging to be done. We can't just lay hands on people and cure everything or recommend general things. You know, we need to see what's happening during that swallow. And, you know, so that's the best way.
And you know what? Just sitting here thinking when we're talking, we're such a food culture society.
Oh, absolutely.
Isn't everything? And I found that, I mean, try and lose weight and then you have to tell your friends you're not going anywhere. You don't have any more friends, you know?
Right.
Because everything's a meal.
Oh, absolutely.
Everything's a meal. And everything is food and everything is swallowing and everything is, oh my God, they can't have that anymore.
Right.
You know, oh, what do you mean they're on a soft diet?
Yeah.
He loves pork chops, you know, this kind of thing.
Yes. Or having worked in home care and seeing people from different cultures, you know, the cultures from India or Chinese and such, they don't eat the same foods we do. Oh, mm-hmm. Mom just eats rice and hard apples and things like that. And so trying to teach them different ways change that was really, difficult, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, with aging, you know, things start to get weaker.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm over here thinking, so what can I do to work on to make sure that I have a stronger, like, swallow or,
Well, they do say, like, tongue strength decreases and such, but it never to the point where it shouldn't be a normal thing that we deteriorate our swallow.
Okay.
I mean, deterioration of cognitive ability, though.
Yeah.
I mean, we need to do things. The biggest thing that I see is when people say, oh, you're retiring. What do you want to do? I just thought I'd sit there and watch TV all day. I'm thinking, oh, my goodness. You know, like, and it's not just, oh, well, we have to do crossword puzzles or we have to do Sudoku. It's not one thing. It's so many things, like just exercise. You know, and getting that blood flowing up to our brains and, you know, getting that going and eating right, not eating all the, things that we shouldn't be and that sort of thing.
Right.
Reading. And they say, like, Googling, like learning something new every day. It doesn't have to be, you know, like I said, one particular thing. But the other big thing is socialization.
I agree.
You stick a patient or a person in a personal care home in their own room who don't come out for meals, who doesn't have much family visiting, and they're plummeting quickly because they don't get that interaction. They don't get that ability to communicate social. And that's a real big thing to keep active and to keep.
And that was the worst thing about, well, there were many factors of COVID, but with the levels of care from skilled to even independent living continuum of cares, that was the worst part for anybody.
Absolutely. You know? And those patients declined.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They did.
And they declined because, they didn't get that social interaction.
And family.
Right. Yeah, now.
Definitely.
Right. Definitely.
Yep, agreed.
Thank God we're over that. I'll knock on wood.
But yeah.
Knock on many woods.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, difficult. Annette, we appreciate you being here.
I do.
Thanks for having me. Like I say, it was, I always felt like the redheaded stepchild, even when I was working in a rehab facility, you know, where they knew, hey, I am me, you know, whether it be the physicians or the insurance or somebody just wasn't seeing our value. But I've always seen it.
Prior to starting the podcast, if I can tell you, Kate, I wanted her to come just because I have such an appreciation from one of the many things that you did professionally. Is my mother had a stroke at a young age. Well, what I think is young is 71. And her stroke hit her speech center so that she is what, if I'm defining still correctly from my old nursing, she was aphasic, so she could not speak for the final 3.5 years of her life. So she lives in Florida and I live in Pittsburgh and I'm her power of attorney. But I had some wonderful, wonderful folks down in Florida that were working with her. Kate, now I'm going back 26 years. Her favorite person on the face of this earth was her speech therapist. It was like Christmas whenever they came because she had a sense of worth when they were working with her. So, you know, they were working with her off and on. And the doctor, of course, the doctor said it, not anybody else, said she's probably not going to be able to speak a word. You know? So my mother, after about 6 months, said my father would interpret for me and say, your mom wants to say this, because she could still write and communicate that way with my father. She learned a word today. So she'd get on the phone and she'd say, po-tay-to. And I would be crying.
Tears,
You know, and then 3 months later, to-may-to. You know, and she'd keep working and working. And so after about a year, my mother, they said that, you know, speech would be discontinued because goals weren't met, you know, and whatever. So my mother, who could only speak 2 words, got on the phone and said to me, my father had said, she's very sad, she this, she that. My mother got on the phone and as clear as day went, shit.
Those are well preserved.
Yes, those are.
I had a nun one time. That's all she could say.
And then my mother worked in a church, and God forbid, you couldn't have a trucker mouth around her.
Right.
But, you know, that was her emotion, and that was her saying that to me. And here's me trying to spin it positive, like, oh, that's another word.
Yeah.
And my father's going, what the hell's wrong with you? But anyway, I thought you'd appreciate, you know, that was her goals, and that's what happened.
And it's those little things we looked for. We didn't, you know, especially with patients who've had severe strokes or for that long period of time. But that brought up another thing is we didn't even delve into alternative communication in this, at this age, you know, with technology and AI and such, you know, we have ALS patients who are communicating beautifully just by eye gaze. And so, you know, and who knows down the road where it might be with implants and your thoughts might come out on the computer, you know, where you won't even have to work so much on the hard part of the speaking, but whether it be for aphasics or for other neurological disorders. So there's a lot of things that are coming down. And
now that's come a long way because my mother substituted bingo in the community was just ringing a bell if she won because she couldn't yell bingo.
Right.
You know, sort of like a Staples bottle.
Yeah.
Bing, 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 bing.
Yeah.
You know, but look at what they're doing
she
now.
She could have hit an alternative communication system and said the word that she wanted to communicate. Yeah.
And these are things to remember if your loved one is ever in this situation.
Correct.
To remember these things that Annette is talking about.
Yes.
To advocate for them.
Right.
To advocate for self.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
It's just key because mm-hmm. we have come a long way from what you were saying, Jane, and what you're saying mm-hmm. now with the alternative communication. It's just, it's amazing. It mm-hmm. really is. And I'm grateful that things are always progressing.
Right. Isn't that the truth?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And grateful absolutely. For 44 years of doing what yeah. you did.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, Annette.
Oh, you're welcome.
I know
yeah,
that.
I did love it.
Yeah. Now, you're very good at what you in your profession, and we are very pleased to have you here this evening with us.
Well, thank you.
Our next session, our next podcast will be with Cheryl Lucas. Cheryl Lucas is a phenom in the mental health field. Mm-hmm. Her specialty is the elderly drug and alcohol use. So I'm looking forward mm-hmm. to that. Jane, you have a closer for us, right?
I do. We always have a closer. Okay. So this is somebody, and I know I'm partial to women. I'm always quoting women except John Lennon. But this is from, are you ready? Queen Elizabeth.
Oh, the mm-hmm.
Queen Elizabeth.
Okay.
I believe that either young or old, all of us have as much to look forward to with confidence and hope as we have to look back with such pride.
Perfect.
So
that's beautiful.
Yeah.
That was from a monarch of how many years, you know?
Right.
So, yep.
Absolutely. So Jane and I would just like to thank you all for listening again to What the Hell is Elder Care. And Jane, do you have any other last thoughts?
I don't. I just would like to say the session this evening, sessions on home care, you know, Kate, you and I have been professionals a long time. And I'll tell you, it's just amazing the things that we learn as we think we're providing the experience and education of the three E's that started this original podcast with us. Mm-hmm. So I love learning still. And I think you addressed that. And that when you said I'm in retirement, I'm still learning.
There you go.
Hey, we didn't know how to do a podcast. So here we are today.
You're doing a great job.
Yeah.
So thank you, Kate. Look forward to next time.
All right. Thank you and take care and be safe out there. Okay.